On this week's show, Beyond the Pencil for Safety with Gabe Guetta from Salus. And this week's news is New York City, the place where construction meets innovation.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, Rob, back on the wheels with me. I'm excited to have you here. Got the background laid out. I feel like we're going way back.
You know, since it's kind of become a regular pattern, I thought you wanted to have a more professional look than my unorganized bookshelf. So I'm putting the studio back together for future endeavors, shall we say.
I love that. I love that. And you're bringing us a new guest today. Gabe, how you doing, man?
I'm great. Excited to be here. I like your background, Rob. It's kind of got that X-Men look a little bit. Hey, you ever?
It does indeed. It's amazing.
Is that what you're going for?
I've got this. I've got four or five other ones. Amazon, you can get the most amazing backgrounds for relatively inexpensive.
It's true. But and then you look, I just like you all to come into my living room and have a conversation with me. You can see Gabe is in the phone booth today, enjoying the view. Hey, it's safe. It's quiet.
It could be a sauna, too. It kind of looks like a sauna.
So. Yeah, we'll tell from how much you start sweating by the end of that. But where are you coming to us from? Because I'm going to just call it out for our guests. I don't think you're in the States right now.
I'm not in the States right now. I'm in Vancouver, born and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And beautiful sunny day. We're actually, our company has a QBR meeting today, and we've got the whole company in town from all over North America flew out. Excited to take a break and do this podcast.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. I love Vancouver, by the way. If anybody, like, that is an awesome place to go. We were just telling stories about being there and visiting. The city is awesome. If you have not been there, totally worth going, man. It's such a cool place. So, and I'm guessing it's middle of summer and it's still quite cool and comfortable there.
Actually, it's pretty hot. I mean, I don't know how to convert this to the Fahrenheit. It's like probably 30 degrees Celsius today. It's pretty hot for Vancouver.
That's hot.
Weather. It is. Yeah. We've had a hot end of June into July, but a rainy period before that. Normally, it's actually the last few years have been pretty nice summers, I'd say. And no forest fires. We get a lot of forest fires here typically. Clear skies. It's nice. Nice time.
Us in the Rocky Mountains. That's why I like it. You know, the Rocky Mountains and Vancouver and the mountains there have a lot in common. Canadian Rockies. So yeah, we're getting the rain here too. So a little warmer than I'd like, but we're getting that rain. So, well, listen, we could talk about the weather all day, but we're here to talk about construction and construction tech. And, I know, why would you choose this industry? Like, give us a little bit of the story behind where you are to, you know, that got you to where you are today at Salus.
This industry, you mean construction or this industry, construction tech, like software?
Construction and construction tech. I mean, because they're married at the hip, no matter what you think.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So my story is for construction, my choice. I was 15 years in construction before I started the software company. And to be honest, coming out of high school, I wasn't that much of an academic, didn't do very well. I actually wanted to get into business and then my grades weren't good enough. And so I felt that construction was kind of my avenue. Whole nother conversation, but I definitely felt like it was like this, it shouldn't have been a second choice because it was so successful for me as a choice, but it felt like a second choice. There was a stigma around it. These conversations with my friends' parents that were their kids were going to university. It's like, well, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going into construction. And it was this feeling of like, oh, well, I don't know what to say to you now. That's a whole nother conversation of an issue we need to solve in construction. But my family, my dad's a cabinet maker, kitchens, bathrooms. My uncle owned his own business in construction. And so I went in loved it. There's so much amazing stuff that happens in construction, incredible people, highly intelligent people, so many different backgrounds, experiences, ways of learning, incredible career. And then set software, why I chose software? Well, I was running a company in construction, and there was, it was a high rise window installation company. We did high rises in BC and Alberta, about 5 to 8 high rise projects a year. A lot of field level labor, right? That's basically all we did. I can tell you that there was never a need for a software when I first started. There was never a need. Was there a desire for it from the office side or the companies or customers we worked for? Sure, they'd love to have more insights into the field of construction. But there's never a problem that we could solve in the field of our day-to-day tasks that tech could solve at the time. And then everything changed. Everything changed when safety changed for us. When I started in construction, safety, which is, if you go further back, it was even different than before I started, but it was wear a hard hat, steel toe boots, high vis vest, go get your job done. If it's dangerous, go do it on a Sunday because no one's around. And that's just the way you did business. That's just how it was. And then that changed dramatically when some of our bigger customers started to enforce more of a compliance-based safety, more prove that you're actually providing a safe work environment for your employees, and prove that you have a safety program, prove that you're following that program. And then that turned into me having to convince 55-year-old window installers to fill out a paper form that they're like, I haven't touched one of these in 10 years. Why do I have to do it now? And then the whole adoption curve around just getting safety adoption, learning the liability as a business leader. At that time, I was running the company, and it's like the liability on me and the business if we fail. And then an incident that happened that pushed us, crew actually dropped an L angle, steel angle, L angle from the 15th floor of a building, almost killing someone, and spotlights all over us, and really pushed us to grow. We had to grow. We couldn't keep doing the safety the way we were doing. And that's where safety, Salus was born, was me searching for something more. My co-founder knew how to build product. He had a company that built mobile apps and web apps, and couldn't find anything on the market that understood the construction industry. The field level construction is very complicated. Forget about what the capabilities do. You can go find a Google form that can fill out digital forms. It's the hierarchies, the relationships between companies, the flow, the physical flow of the industry at the field level. Software breaks against that. And so that's where I decided to start the software company. I know, Jeff, that was a much longer answer than you probably wanted from me. But
you broke down a few things that we talk about consistently on the show. I love that you look back at, you know, your choice to go in construction and are honest about how maybe some of your friends' parents felt it was against uni and going to university or going there versus getting into the field. But I mean, look at the way it created a career for you, right? It created a career for you in construction itself, right? And building things, but then also, you know, provided you with the opportunities to create a software company. So like that's the path people don't talk about as much, is that if you can be successful in construction and construction management and, you know, building, whether you're a trade or a GC, if you can be successful here in this industry, you can handle the risks of other industries for sure. And it's also, you know, kind of cool to see a co-founder come out of, you know, the tech space, which we see a lot. You know, you'll see a lot of tech people come in solo and they don't have a connection to the industry. So to see somebody who's connected to the problem, and, you know, you kind of glassed over it, but that drop, that near miss, I mean, I can't tell you how many founders I have on who have an incident like that in their past that has completely changed the trajectory of their future.
100%. Founders, in my opinion, are problem solvers. And my career has been built on the how I acted in the moments that I failed or we failed as a business. You build the strongest relationships, you learn the most, and you can push your business further faster than if it never happened. And so when you have these things happen and you are forced to self-reflect and try and use those to elevate yourself, you find the barriers that you can't get past. And for us, it was paper. We would be doomed to repeat that incident because we didn't have the insight into the field that we needed. To be able to be more preventative in the way that we managed our health and safety. And just one other note on what you said around the career in construction. I think it's so unique in construction because of what it teaches you, not just like, okay, how to use tools and that type of stuff is completely different. That's very specific to construction. But the way in which you learn about yourself and learn how to learn, it's through physical learning, through building, through collaboration with so many different personality types. You have laborers on site to billionaires that are in trade meetings with you, carpenters, you have people that never went to school, the people that have master's degrees and engineers. You all have to come together and solve problems, and you all have to understand how to work together to win together, right? And you might even be competitors, or you might not work like right side by side, but all your problems connect and touch in a physical way. It's one of the only industries in the world where 40 different companies are working in one physical location together, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And in most of our businesses and most of the things that we do, the widgets aren't visible. You know, they might be a number on a spreadsheet or on a P&L or on something else, but physically there is a building being built in front of you that's based on your ability or inability to make good decisions and to work together as a team. So now, you know, I have my, this is why, you know, we have our safety expert here, because you ended up in the safety world. So Rob, I'm kind of interested in what you got and what you want to hear out of Gabe here.
So Gabe, let's talk about that form that wasn't touched for 10 years, because that's a complacency issue. I'm curious of what is your philosophy on how can software improve this complacency by contractors, construction pros, in regards to safety workflows of if they hadn't touched a piece of paper for 10 years, assuming they have a smartphone, why are they going to use an app any differently than a piece of paper to document something like, a piece of metal falling 15 floors? That's a big rut row. How do you attack that from the tech side of the table?
Yeah, there's so many different things in that question. So one of the aspects, Rob, is when I said they hadn't filled out a form in 10 years, it's that like that's not how safety was done before. So it was nobody in construction doesn't want to come home at the end of the day. They want to work, they want to come home, they want to do their job, they want to get to work right away too and solve problems. They solve problems with their hands. They're building things. They're creating things. That's why they're on site. And the reality is that in health and safety, and the thing that transitioned at Tross Construction, which is the company I worked at, is that the understanding behind health and safety. So before, like when I came into the industry, it's like, you're going to learn health and safety based on whatever company you first join. They're going to teach you the basics on wear hard hat, steel toe boots, don't put your finger in that light socket. And by the way, all these different things around like ladder safety, whatever, you're going to learn because I personally saw somebody really get screwed up over that, and I'm going to make sure you don't have it. And there's no real gateway to the industry. And it's crazy because you're dealing with so many different peoples with so many different backgrounds. Some, my parents could have been rock climbers and I might not have been scared of heights. And so my risk on a job site could have been much higher than somebody that's terrified of heights is going to have 4 points, 5 points of contact on a ladder at all times, right? And so the reality is that you're dealing with a world of new and young workers, all this other stuff, but also the reality that safety is dealing with human nature, and human nature is complacency is natural. It's how we progress as humanity, right? Like when you're driving, the best example of complacency that I give is you're driving down the highway. The next time you drive down the highway and you're going 90 miles an hour or whatever the speed limit is in the US, 100 kilometers an hour, 60 miles or something, I think. And you're going down one direction and you have a semi truck going the other, and there's a 6-inch painted line in between the two of you. And you're listening to the radio, you got one hand on the wheel, you're talking to your buddy, and there's zero fear in you. You take somebody that's 25 years old, which this is probably impossible to do, but it's never seen a car, never watched cars on TV, or never been in a car, and you put them in a vehicle and do that, they are going to be petrified. And so the reality is you should be petrified. That's incredibly scary and dangerous. You are 1-6 inches away from certain death. And so the reality is this happens all the time in construction. Is I worked on high-rise construction my career, and I started out being scared of heights and I ended up not being scared of heights. And the amount of times I could tell you that I had a harness on, that I would be what we call air hooked, where you're hooked to yourself because you went to get material so many times and you just forgot to hook up to the lifeline, the lanyard or your lifeline. And it's not that you're not don't want to go home. It's that you're not you don't identify risk anymore. And so you're getting yourself in these situations. And so the reality of what a paper form, or what we were trying to accomplish with a paper form, is how do you break up that complacency? How do you make people stop and think? That's what it's all about. And so this is where it even gets more complicated, is the way in which we are attempting as a safety community to break up complacency is to introduce things that make people stop and think. So forms, whether they're paper forms or digital forms, that's what we're trying to do. The first problem that I see with that is, I described this at the beginning, being in the field level of construction. Like, I'm talking about the people that are building, the carpenters, electricians, drywallers, laborers. Predominantly, we are not academic people. We do not, and it doesn't mean we're not intelligent. We're highly intelligent. It just means we don't learn or absorb through academic processes. What is a paper form? It's reading, writing, and academic. And so one of the things that we battle is, like, look, we're going through an evolution in this industry where safety is now being adopted in a way that I think is right. We have to start looking at it in a level of compliance, as far as like force, making sure that there's a system in place and the companies are proving that they're providing a safe work environment. But at the same time, we can't go down this path where it's like the safety program you put in place is there now to protect the business. You have to remember, it's yes, the result should be protecting the business, but the core part of this is to ensure that you're protecting the workers. And so how can we disrupt the way that field level workers are interacting with safety to create that, to disrupt complacency, to break it up? And the reality is that becomes an ever shifting thing. The form that you gave them in week one turns into complacency in month two, right? And so paper-wise, for starters, it's almost impossible, because the amount of time and effort it takes you to change a form and get it out, the amount of times that we had a form that was somebody on our, whether it was a sub-trade or one of our internal team, was using a form that was literally 3 years old, and we had six different versions of that, it was in a binder that they found somewhere. For one, that's problem number one. Number two is that you have to have continuous creativity and impact on these forms that will create a disruptive environment for that end worker to create that breakup in complacency. And the reality of all of this is that all has to happen within a 5-minute window, or you're going to lose the worker. They're just going to pencil with it because they want to get to work. And so our vision is, how do you interact the ability to guide them through, because a part of this form is to guide them through things that they might not have thought of. Like, are you working with a new and young worker? Is somebody working above you? What is the weather? Pulling that data together, but also interjecting things like a 5-second video on ladder safety. Everyone's probably like, how can you cover anything in 5 seconds? Part of the problem with these training things is that you look at ladder safety and you're like, oh crap, these are all the things that could go wrong with ladder safety. We have to cover them all. But the human nature aspect is, you might want to cover them all, but they're not absorbing them all. So do your research as an industry. Like, we need to do our research as an industry, figure out what is the main reason for ladder injuries, and say, okay, it's not having 3 points of contact, or the improper slope, or whatever it is. And just make sure in 5 to 10 seconds, you make sure that when they hit, they're working on a ladder in a form, automatically a 5 or 10 second video pops up, right? They're not going to listen to a 30-second video. That's the hard truth of it. But a 5-second video could potentially save their life, right? Or they hit something, hey, I'm working with peel and stick primer. Did you know? Because, and I'll stop here. You can tell I tend to go on and on, but I will stop here. One of the things that we're trying to solve is, there's so many barriers to health and safety, to having the ability to work safe. And a lot of it is the knowledge. Do I know that primer, for example, if I'm exposed to it without protection for an extended period of time, has a high risk of causing cancer, right? That type of information you might know if you read your 400-page safety manual, but realistically, that's not going to happen.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
How do you put impactful snippets in that daily work environment? The last thing I'll say is, we haven't won until a worker reaches for their phone to solve safety, like they reach for a hammer to pull a nail. If they're doing it based on compliance, as in you have to do this daily, you have to do this weekly, we are losing. Oh, sorry. That was a lot.
No, but it shows his history, right, Rob? It shows how connected he is to the industry.
Absolutely. You kind of talked about it before. Founders that come into the tech space directly out of the industry, you have pains. You have seen things happen. You're not theorizing. You're not pontificating. You have seen bad things happen, and you're trying to make things better through this effort of creating technology. And that complacency notion, that's an interesting way of thinking about the last thing you're talking about. You know you've solved the problem when they'll reach for the app the way they would for a nail, because right now, nail and hammer is an accepted workflow. It's been around for hundreds of years.
Solving a problem.
Yeah. You got to join two pieces of wood, hammer and a nail, versus, all right, something just happened. We need to document it. Go get the form. That's kind of the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, we talk about this a lot. You've got a lot of new and young workers coming into the industry. We have a lot of folks leaving, and a lot of that knowledge is leaving. And a lot of that was, you know, like, hey, we're working with primer. Everybody knows long time exposure to primer, it's not a good thing. You know, in fact, some of them have buddies that were their mentors that have had the problem, right? So this is why you have a drop that was ties you to what this is. They have their buddy, you know. But they're leaving. So these interrupts, this knowledge, this brief thing that they need to go, wait, Salus, this software is my knowledge. I'm opening up a new chemical. I mean, I don't think we talk about this. I mean, you guys in the safety world, when we're talking in the tech world, we're talking a lot about hammers and nails and steel and mechanicals and piping and things like that. But we don't talk about the number of chemicals that get used in the work that we do. I was at the FCA, which is the Finishing Contractors Association, basically painters, right? And I think of painters as like paint on my wall. And then I had my whole world shaken up by, you know, these folks that are, you know, treating piping that goes into water and wastewater treatment plants and into laboratory and science areas. And like, the number of chemicals you guys deal with is ridiculous. So to me, it makes a lot of sense about creating interrupts. What are some of the ways that, you know, you're thinking through, you know, taking these new journeymen on the journey into the industry and trying to keep them safe? Because I love that idea. I'm training a 16-year-old kid how to drive, right? He just got his license and I've been doing it for a while. And I had the explanation with him of like, listen, this is a construct we've created, that there is a double yellow line that keeps two opposing forces from hitting one another. Right. There is nothing.
It's a theoretical barrier.
It is literally a theoretical barrier. That is it. Yeah. And I'm like, you have to understand too, that someone can break that barrier, right? Like it is just a construct that we have created. So you have to be aware. You have to think. So how do you get these folks thinking more, and what's really driving your future as you guys grow?
I'll give you an analogy that I think is a testament to society and how we think as people, that transcends to how construction works. We think of the left and the right lane as passing and not passing. That's it. It's like, I need to get somewhere. I go here. And if not, go on the right side so other people can get wherever they need to go. The reality is, the statistics, I'm not sure about this, but I am guaranteeing you the statistics of if you are in the right lane versus the left lane in these accidents on oncoming traffic is significantly lower. So how do we not have this a part of the conversation is, hey, travel in the right lane, by the way, because in case you didn't notice, there is, you know, like almost immediate death on the other side if you cross that line on the left side. Right. And so the same mindset is in construction. It's like we think of get something done. We need to go get something done, always get something done. And we stop thinking of the things that are going to get us home safe. And so it's not just a technology. It's a movement that has to happen together as an industry. It has to happen with cross collaboration between construction tech companies, which needs to increase dramatically for us all to be successful, but also between companies. A lot of this, there's still a stigma around health and safety and sharing information. But the reality is, the amount of repeat incidents that happen in this industry is ridiculous. I worked in high-rise construction and windows, one of the most high-risk verticals in the industry. I could go on for hours about the stuff that I've done or seen that would make you just go crazy. The reality is, we had a few incidents in Vancouver. Windows fell on high-rises. We didn't drop them, but they happened in our town. To this day, I have no idea why it happened. No idea why it happened. What was the things that came together to make that situation happen? And the incidents that happen across an industry are constantly happening. And so some of this stuff is not just through the technology of making sure that technology out there can, like you said, it has to come from the industry. You can't speak at the industry. You have to understand that a lot of our people we've talked to when we were raising capital and stuff is like, why can't you just standardize everything? Make a one form that fits all. It's like, well, you don't get it. A drywaller and an electrician might as well be in completely different industries in the work that they have to perform. You have to create a product that can match their physical workflows and the things that have to break up their complacency without creating a custom software. But at the same time, as you do that stuff, it can also be the conduit for information. Imagine a world, and it's important to note, this can be done without demonizing anyone. You don't have to share. Like, of course, there's those high profile incidents that happen and everyone knows about who did it and why. But those are the ones that most people tend to learn from. There's thousands and thousands of... Rob, imagine if near misses were shared across an industry, right? Forget the incidents. Imagine if just near misses. And imagine if it was a world where and not just blanket spray and pray, where all of these different trades are sharing information, you have to sift through it. If I'm a drywaller, and I'm filling out a form or going through my daily health and safety stuff, and I get a notification saying, hey, did you know, doesn't say where or when or anything. Did you know that there was just an incident, these are some of the incidents that have happened in your, in high-rise construction drywall work that you should be aware of. That creates impact and relation, right? If it's like, hey, did you know that a bricklayer in, you know, the UK dropped a brick from the 10th floor, you're going to be like, I'm a drywaller in North America. I don't care.
Yep.
The bottom line is technology can pull all of this together. It can elevate all of us to learn from each other. But the reality is we can't do this alone. The way in which we build technology has to be thought of not just as single systems of record for a single company. They have to elevate to the level of an industry, which a lot of new tech companies are starting to do. It's even in the way that you manage the profiles for workers and companies and sites. Like when we built Salus, we didn't know any better. Robbie, my CTO and co-founder, was just like, okay, how should we structure this? And I was like, I didn't even know what the word SaaS was, remember, when I started this company. So I just said, well, this is how the industry works. There isn't 10 Jim's Plumbing. There's one. There isn't 15, you know, Saline Village job sites. There's one. There isn't 25 Gabe Guetta workers. There's one. And there's subs of subs. And there's like, we have to build it to replicate that so that it's easy for people to work within our product. And not realizing that we did something that was kind of out of the norm and out of the box. And so we just stayed. And what we've always stayed true to is everything that construction tech has to start doing has to be anchored in value for the customer and the end user. We have to stop looking at how much ARR is this going to unlock? Of course, that matters, but that will come if you provide value and impact for the customer and you unlock integration and partnerships with construction tech partners that actually provide value that are not just built surface level to sell more product. We will all win. We have to start providing value and impact for the end users.
Everyone supports a culture of well-being in the field and is equipped with the tools to help prevent suicide in construction. Procore Safety Qualified courses were built in partnership with our customers, elevating enhancements to their standard OSHA training. And the Bringing the Right Mindset series equips individuals and leaders alike with the skills necessary to really build resilient teams. we've made these three courses available for free and on demand, and they're offered both in English as well as Spanish, and they are CEU certifiable. Procore.com/certified-qualified is where we host our Procore's learning portal, and anyone can use their Procore credentials or create a free account to get started.
You go to a core value that gets outside of construction and outside of all of it and into the world of business, and it's start with why. It's all about starting with why. Why the heck am I going to get up every day and try to do this? And you're right. It's pretty obvious when they're getting up every day for ARR. I can see it in them in a second. Instead of I get up every day hoping that what I saw happen on a job site doesn't happen to anybody else on a job site when it can be prevented in the future. And oh, by the way, I have there's so many that don't have an intricate knowledge of the complexities that exist on a job site, and that it's literally 50 different, completely different trades, completely different types of businesses, completely different types of work. I mean, maybe there's a common denominator of certain tools and certain things across them, but they might as well be one's working on Mars and one's working on Venus because they're totally different. You know, what you said is, I don't care what happens to a glazer. Why? Because I pour concrete, man, and I build concrete form sets and I do that. Well, you work at high heights. I work on form work that's not quite done. And if I'm tied off wrong, I'm going over into a bunch of spikes below me. And so I don't care if you dropped an angle iron from however high you did, because I'm on the ground and there's nothing above me.
But I care that
another guy fell or a woman fell because they weren't tied. Or Rob, this is a historical one. I go back to you all the time. I was tied off, but it was too long.
Yeah.
You know, this is the intricacies. This is the starting with why and creating interrupts that make a difference, right? Because if you don't speak to them, they're not going to change, right? Again, you're right. We're just going to go rolling on down the road the way we want to. And because, look, we got work to do. In the end, my why is not your forms. You know, and the industry's why is, yes, we want everyone to go home, but we want to build the future. And if it takes me too much time, I'm going to pencil whip it because I got to get to work. Because it's not like I've got enough hands to do the work, especially at the level you're talking about with what they care about on a day. So you only have 5 seconds to interrupt them for that day. Rob, I'm interested. Gabe's got me going off on a tangent. What else do you have for Gabe?
How about a story of success? Every time we're talking with a company that's come out with a new product, a new way of solving something, that's one of those little nuggets I'm looking for of, I don't know if you can mention the company's name or the city or even the trade, but you clearly have customers that think your software is pretty awesome. So they're paying you money to use it, which is awesome. What's one or two examples that you could share of how has a company, and the one I'm looking for is who was a company that was completely paper-based, who was that old school that saw the vision from Salus and said, we're going to try this. Do you have an example of somebody that's actually really leaned in to the software theory and doing good stuff with it?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many. And one of the things that is one of our core values, true partnership, true partners, right? And it's not just for our business, true partners to our business, true partners to our customer. We were in the middle of a QBR and I just told the sales team, like, if you're selling to make your quota and you're not selling to ensure that our product is providing value to our customers, then you're doing it wrong. And you're not in the right company. And so because we do that and we get very close and build, our business is built on the foundation of relationships, just like the construction industry is. And so when you do that, you start to learn so much from your customers on how they're using Salus in a way that is an impact on their business that I never thought safety could, for starters. One of the things that we're doing is we're not only, safety is not just powered by Salus in these companies, but we're also elevating these leaders in a safety world that, as you know, in the safety world, a lot of times gets stuck between a rock and a hard place. And they're now having an impact on the business because of the data they're pulling from the field, the insights that they can get that their businesses have never seen before, that they're being elevated in their role on having true impact on the business success. But going more to what we were talking about, there's so many different companies that I could name, but a few that come to mind is two different. One is Universal Group, who is a company that we've been with for a few years now. It's a flagging company in North America now, predominantly in Canada. They probably have about, I'm going to be off on this, about 2,500 employees. And they bought a bunch of different companies across North America as they've scaled. They were running 14 different software and paper-based in a lot of their workflows because they couldn't get down to being digital. They pulled it all together in Salus. And the thing that impressed me the most is the way in which they use our software. It's the first time I looked at, they brought me to one of their safety events where they bring all their trade partners in. They talk about how to elevate safety in the community and the industry. And they showed me, they showed everyone how they're using Salus and what they'd done with forms and everything else. And I looked at it, I was like, I didn't even know our product could do that. And what they did is they took a workflow that is exactly touching the exactly what we were talking about, providing relevant information that will have a high impact on their field level workers. What they have to do, it's mandated in Canada, is they have to do a risk assessment for every single job, every single site, which for them could be a street corner that could they could go every day to a new one or every few hours, and they have to do a risk assessment and pull everyone into that. They have to buy it, like it's heavily enforced now. And what the hard part is they have to pull all these different regulations in for depending on the structure of the road. Is it two lane? Is it single lane? Is there ditches on either side? All this type of stuff. It was taking them 3 hours to do this type of stuff. But what they did is they took all this information, and because our system has form logic, they built this insanely massive form where the complexity is completely pushed down. So in our system, we hold that based on triggers. So if I select this road type, all of a sudden all the information, even the regulatory information in visuals, populates the form. So not only is it collaborative so that they at high impact for that end user, they were able to do a form that used to take them 3 hours, and they do it, I'm going to maybe misquote this, I believe in 30 to 45 minutes. Right. And that's a huge impact on their business. But not only that, the way in which they can communicate, the way in which, like, that's a huge impact for the field level worker for buy-in. Like, they hate filling out 3 hours of forms. Hate it. Right. You can imagine. So that's a huge impact. And then the buy-in, the collaboration, the fact that you're getting feedback from the field saying, hey, can you change this aspect of the form? Seconds later, it's done. Right. Or, hey, can we have a QR code here? Or can we do this? Or, hey, I don't want to download an app because I think you're tracking me. Great. Our system, you don't need to download a mobile app. There's a progressive web app. One of the things that you talked about at the field level of construction with people get lost on is how complex it is. When I hear the buzz around construction tech and people are screaming about AI and all this other stuff, yes, AI is going to have a huge impact. And we're heavily invested in AI. The reality of the stuff that we deal with on a daily basis is, how do you get a field level worker that's using an iPhone 6 that won't download a mobile app to start interacting with your product and automatically get categorized under the company that they work for, even though they're a sub of a sub on a job site, right? AI is not going to solve that.
Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built.
And until we're at the forefront of that problem, that's why I love field level construction, because the barriers that are set in place, I tell our team, until our product can work as well as paper, And people are like, what do you mean as well as paper? Digital is way better than paper. It is for collecting data, but it's not for actual physical workflows. You can walk online, offline with paper. You can have 14 different people sign that form from whatever different company you want. And so for the last 5 years, our whole mandate is you have to be able to replicate the physical workflows of the industry at the field level of construction in order for us to win. And when our investors are like, why do you keep building this capability? Your product's incredible. Just sell it. It's like, yeah, we're selling it. We'll go. But we will never stop breaking down those barriers, because when we start doing that is when we're done. You might as well just pack up and leave. And then the other company, and this is quick, is that they've used Salus for the why. Now, the why isn't something that Salus provides. That's something that is a cultural mindset that you have to create. But because of the technology, you can communicate it at scale. And the thing that I love is somebody you guys should chat with at some point, Steve Howe from Emil Anderson. He had a serious incident when he was working for another company, and it's changed his life. He's now in safety. He does public speaking. He anchors his whole company into the why, because unless your field level worker gets it and understands why you're doing this, if they just think you're doing it to protect the business, they'll get it and they'll do it, but you're not achieving what you're trying to achieve. But if you anchor it, so he actually gets them to put stickers on their hard hat. What's your why? It could be your cat. It could be your children. It could be the boat that you love and you're 22 years old and you want to go home and go fishing. What is your why? Why are you going home every day? You're not here to work. You're living. You don't live to work. You work to live. What is your why? Once you anchor it in that and you understand that safety is getting you to that why every day, you start looking at it a completely different way. And we're proud to be able to power these companies in this way. We are not King Arthur. We never will be. We're Excalibur. We're powering the industry. We're powering our customers to be better. That's all we are. We're the tool.
So you're the guide. They're the ones getting there. They're the ones that have to drive them to get home. I love this, the way that you're putting those things together and sort of weaving it into the fabric of what they do, because you came from it. So, I mean, the form logic, it's crazy. I mean, Rob, you can remember back in our days, I built this form logic. That was one of the first things I did, because I was thrown onto a safety committee as an IT person for a masonry company, and I have no idea what safety means on a job site. And right. They'd be like, oh, well, you're going on this job site. Well, you got to have this. You got to have that. You got to have this. I'm like, how do I know that? I don't right. know that. So we created all those triggers. Like, if scaffolding, then. But it never tied back to anything. And there was no real good, you know, way to do it. But I knew it had to be there. And yeah. I love your it's got to be as good as paper, because we need a respect for perspective. The yes. perspective is Love people, that. Paper works.
Yes.
It doesn't unlock the power of the future, and it doesn't mm-hmm. unlock the insights that we need, but it sure as hell works. I mean, yep. you can't fight it. I mean, like you said, I can turn it into a paper airplane and fly it across the way, and somebody can pick it up and keep writing on it. But the interesting thing about your time from 3 hours to 45 minutes is not just quantity to quantity, it's quantity to quality. Because if you have to go for 3 hours to do this, by the time you reach hour one, you're starting to whip through things. You're starting yeah. to, and you're doing it so that if people show up in a compliance perspective, I don't get busted. And then I'm not dealing with my why is now I don't want a fine, and my boss finding out about the fine and then coming after me.
Yeah.
Whereas when it shrunk to 45 minutes, and I love that you picked a flagging group, because people don't understand how hard that kind of thing is, right?
Incredibly difficult.
I watch it all the time, and I'm driving, and I talk to my kids about this. I'm like, okay, look, that has a T stop in it. There is a stop sign there. So you have to have a person here, here, here. They have to communicate with one another. And if one of them communicates and they have to know all of that. And you're right. Sometimes they're moving in 3 hour shifts and they're setting up on a highway that's active at the time.
Exactly.
Right? So that 45 minutes is not just a quantity. It's now a quality assessment based on the logic that is provided, that you didn't answer it. Like you said, you're not the brain. you're the brawn of offering the options. They're the brain for making the decisions. And that's always the key to this is, but quite frankly, they got so much to worry about. They're going to forget a thing or two. And you're going to remind them that, okay, is there a breakdown lane coming because there's an exit?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there is an exit in this. I'm going to have to cone it off this way. How far back do I have to be and how much room do I have to give them for that exit? Like, this is the stuff that's just setting up the road. That's just setting up the road. That's exactly. Not ripping it out. That's not bringing in new shipments. That's not staging. That's not all the other things.
The machinery you're working with, the inspections, if there's a near miss or an incident, and the collaboration of like, I'm a new worker going out there, a babe in the woods. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And like being able to have collaboration through the product, but also being able to have like two people working together on a form together, and then being able to go online and offline. And like, you have to allow this stuff to happen in order to mimic the physical workflows. And it sounds simple, but it's so complicated on the technology side. And what our devs say, no, this is how tech works. Or they used to say this, they've learned not to say it. It's like, the industry needs to adapt. It's like, no, we need to adapt because there's a physical workflow that they will not change. They'll just find a workaround and then we're not, then paper's better.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to say is that was the other thing is paper never says can't load or loading.
Yeah.
It's paper. It's right here. I can use it. So there's a number of challenges to overcome. So it's just awesome to see you really putting that kind of thought and process into, you know, making a difference. And the Steve Howes of the world, there are so many of them that foundationally or fundamentally were changed by something that drives them to improve their industry, improve their company, improve, you know, and work with groups like yours to drive this entire industry forward. Cause it's going to take all of us. And I love that analogy or the look at how safety's gotten this rap that they're the necessary evil. You know, Rob, you know this, you had to show up on site and everybody hairs prickle. You know, everybody gets a little bit of a different look.
Text messages flying out, safety's on site, right?
You know, Rob's here. Rob's here.
Yeah.
Everybody, Rob's here. Hey, get that cord. Do that.
Take like, a break. Break time.
And it's like, no, guys, that's not industry. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to send you home. And I love that. Like, your why is, I say this all the time, Rob, we have from the beginning. I work to live, I don't live to work. And I got lots of stuff I want to go home to. I have lots of other 100%. Things I want to do. I want to be productive and I want to go home. And I want all the people in this industry to do that as well. And with all, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes and just so cool to see someone in the software environment that has the ability to understand the nuanced difficulties across all our different trades. Cause they, that respect for what they do. And I can see too, how the product itself can grow exponentially with its ability to learn. As long as the people running it are interested in learning and not just focused on ARR. And I like that. ARR comes like
you can have both.
Yes. Well, that's the thing is it's like people who look and they come in, they're like, we're going to come into construction. We're going to disrupt it.
Yeah.
Disruption is not a goal. It's a byproduct.
Yes.
And I think revenue and ARR are not a goal. They're a byproduct of a great product with a great idea with great relationships. And that's how the world works. But man, is it hard to sit in that seat and do it? Because I mean, there's so many of them out there that are just, you know, hey, I can crank this thing up and I can get a billion people on and, you know, I can exit.
And make a lot of money. And I think the way to win, you have to base it in reality. And what a lot of people don't realize, and I'm all about calling out the truth, there's a stigma around health and safety for sure when I was in the industry, still out there now. And what I mean by a stigma is like, it's still a feeling that it's not cool to do safe things. Like, it's better now. But when I was wearing ear protection, when I was 21 years old or 22 years old, and I'm surrounded by 27-year-olds to 60-year-olds that are like not wearing it, and they're looking at me like I'm an alien. It's like the first goalie in hockey to wear a mask. Who's this guy? Right? Now you can't even imagine not wearing a mask in hockey, right? There's a stigma there, and it's human nature. We push our kids day in and day out before they get into the work environment to push themselves to face their fear, to grow. Look at a playground in a school. It's a perfect example. You can do the monkey bars. I know you're scared, but you can do it, right? And so it's this weird world that we have to, like, there shouldn't be a stigma, but yet society creates a stigma around health and safety, right? Yeah. And it's like, it's weird. And so to win, you have to base it in reality. You can't go in there with rosy colored glasses and an idealistic perspective on how things are going to work. It's not reality. And that's how you gain the respect of the industry, knowing reality and talking truth.
So basically, Rob, I think Gabe just dropped the mic on, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. It's actually grit. It's actually hard. And it needs to be based in the reality of what construction really looks like. And look, it is high risk. And it always will be high risk. And guess what? We have risk takers that come into this industry. That is who we draw here. So inherently, you have a double-edged sword with that. So it was awesome. Gabe, it's so great to have somebody as passionate as you sit down with us on the crew and, you know, rip through what you're doing. I'm excited to have you stay with us. Don't worry, we're not going to lose Gabe for the day, because we're going to jump into the construction technology news of the week. Rob, what you got for me, buddy?
Well, I was looking around for something new and unique, but I wanted to tie it into Canada this week. So Gabe, I'm not sure if you've heard of this company called Nidus 3D. So I found this on Yahoo Tech. The story is called 3D Printing Firm Achieves World's First Next-Gen Construction Technology, Impressive Achievement That Only Amplifies the Technology's Potential. So what are we talking about? A Canadian-based company called Nidus 3D. They're continuing to revolutionize the construction industry, according to the article, using COBIDS technology to build North America's first 3D printed three-story structure. So this is coming out of Architect News. It was a 4,500 square foot townhouse in the Toronto area. It's got four residential units, and including, Jeff, this is something interesting I haven't seen called out, the first 3D printed basement. So now we're talking about going below grade, which from what I understand about Toronto, below grade, there's a few months out of the year that gets really interesting, right? With the freeze line and the utilities. So the show, the crew, we've always been fascinated with 3D printing. And especially as we get into the residential space of, we got to make more housing. Here's an interesting way to do it. And they're doing something now. Jeff, maybe you've seen a lot more of these than I have. I haven't seen somebody printing a 3D basement, three stories, 4,500 square feet. That's pretty interesting in a major, you know, North American market. What do you think?
Is that concrete? I'm assuming it's concrete.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's 3D printed concrete. That's the interesting part of this one, is we're seeing a lot of 3D printed concrete. We have been covering it for a really long time. And there's still a number of barriers for it to get over, not the least of which is, you know, it's the largest carbon producer there is. What I like about the 3D printing of it is it does, you know, cut down on waste. There's a ton of waste in concrete in and of itself. So 3D printing it really reduces some of that, which reduces costs, which is good. And we're seeing some, I would say, innovation in that area of the material itself. So there's this opportunity for the two to come together. But it has just been so hard to truly do this at scale and get it from place to place. And it disrupts the way we do things, right? And like Gabe said, with his product, like, you have to have a respect for the perspective of how the job gets done on the job site. And when you introduce a technology like this that 3D prints, it really has a tendency on site to change the flow. And I think there's a lot of people holding back to that change.
Yeah, that's a So I don't know very much about 3D printing, but immediately my construction side goes to these questions like, how is it fed? Is it fed? Is it just a pump truck that sits there all day feeding this 3D printer? Does it have the materials? Is it creating concrete? Like, these are things that probably the founder of this is like, I have all the answers, or other people that know more, like, it solves that. And then the rate in which it goes, like, concrete can go pretty quick. Our best towers that we were doing, they were two towers side by side, and we were doing a week and a half between the two towers. They were pouring concrete two floors every week and a half, and our windows were turning over every 4 days a floor, which is insane. But that's high-rise construction. You got to be on a one-week schedule predominantly to be able to make money for everyone. And so then the question goes, like, okay, on a residential house, it's a little different, but still at scale, like you said, how does this work with all the other subtrades? You got to wait till the whole structure's done, I'm assuming. How does the reshoring, how does everything work? Is it doing the slab as well? So many questions. I think it's very interesting because there's also the aspect of, like, how do we elevate our field level workers to be more than how I believe they can be treated, which is like a commodity, where it's like, you go do this, here's the schedule, we just throw people at it, and they don't really exist as people because they're tools. And that's horrible, but that's the reality of the industry in a lot of sense. They don't have a work-life balance, they don't, like, they're physically drained. How can we enable them to have the tools that actually elevate them to be able to do what they do in a more technologically advanced way, where they feel elevated, they have a work-life balance, and we start attracting more people into construction? From, like, look, reality is, you go into elementary school, people love construction. Kids love construction. Absolutely. By the time they get into high school, it's like, what? Construction? You're going to go into construction? Now, I know there's a movement to make that better, and it is not as bad as I'm saying, but the reality is, it's still there. There's still a big stigma. And so I think this type of stuff can solve those things, but is it being based in reality?
Yeah,
the way they're solving the problem.
You nailed it with the commodity, because we had a guy on the show a long time back that I'm friends with, Jackson Huggard, and he took over his family business on window restoration. So, you know, having to maintain the old windows and restore them, and he quickly said, look, the minute you change your people from a commodity to a competitive advantage, watch the production go up. And it was so cool. And we need that. And you're right. What's cool about the 3D printing and additive manufacturing in general is we need companies throwing the money at it, because they're, in all honesty, they're like robotics. They're not going to build the robot that truly transforms in the first try, but they're going to build an actuation arm of some sort, or they're going to build a material, you know, extrusion process that's like, oh my gosh, we can use this to be so much more efficient. And
100%.
Gabe, none of these are built really for the high rises, right? They're, and some of these have third world countries in mind as well. Like, I think you're going to see there's plenty of, you know, devastated areas that if they could 3D print and have less workforce to build something that's pretty basic, but withstands the next tornado or hurricane or whatever it is, it could bring valuable back to life. So nice article, Rob. What do you got next for us, buddy?
All right. The second one that I found is from PBC Today: inflation, rising costs, and difficulties accessing finance. How construction SMEs can overcome these challenges. So it's really digging into these three main things that so many of the small and mid-sized businesses are dealing with. First, rising material cost. How do you lock in a price to give a quote and an estimate before you get locked into that contract and it rises? We've got issues with access to financing still. You know, it's getting a little bit crazy there. And then just the inflation across the board. You know, materials are costing more, inflation across the whole gambit of the economy, and then access to financing. So this is where they are talking a little bit about trying to look at how different softwares can help with this, flexible financing solutions. One that I really like, Jeff, I know you've looked at a lot, is utilizing technology for procurement efficiency. We've seen three or four companies come at this the last several years of how can you really go from at the point of work where the foreman, the super in the field is saying, here's what I need and here's how much I need of it, especially, you know, dense urban environments where Gabe, like you're talking about, when you're building high rise, there's no big laydown yard. No. You know, how do you know for that, as we get into that lean methodology, real-time delivery, or Jeff, then there's also, we've talked a little bit about this today, implement data decisions, data-driven decisions. You don't do that, unfortunately, with paper. Paper's rock solid. It's always there, but it is information. As we used to joke about that carbon locker, it's there. You can go get it, but you can't share it with the team or the owner or anybody else. So what do you guys think about those three topics and how you can use technology to either procure materials more efficiently, or where are you making your decisions?
Now's the time, Rob. I'll call these guys out. PBC Today, if you can follow along here, it's data enhanced decision making, because the data does not drive a decision, because that means the data knows what you want and they don't know what you want. They don't know what you care about. They'll never know. They'll never have, maybe someday in the 30, 50 year range, they'll truly be able to absorb what we care about and what we want, but they will inform and enhance our decision making because they'll make it faster and better. And now more than ever, I love this because we did this a while back called punching above your weight. I think now in the industry is the opportunity for small and medium construction businesses to harness technology and really outpace their competitors. Because it used to be an industry, and Gabe, you can speak to this when you were there, that could squash that. Right? I have better relationships. I get priority. My trades work for me, you know, or, you know, I work with these guys and I have a little, you know, we got some understandings. Now there's so much work and money is so expensive that with very simple building blocks, a good cost control system, a good procurement system, a good safety system, and a good scheduling and monitoring system wrapped together in a data workflow, you can be faster, better, more efficient. You can go after the most profitable, the safest, the right work and grow and outpace. And by the way, like your boy Steve, create an environment where people want to work for you. And that, as labor becomes the critical component, if I can go and work for the big behemoth, but I still have to fill out paper PTO and I still have to fill out pencil whip forms and I have to spend 3 hours doing my stuff. Or I can go to these young guns that my PTO is right there on the web and I can see and request things here and get my onboarding experience. And I can be felt like I'm being kept safe because I have this system that walks me through it. I have this whole ability to focus on my work, get my work done, go home. And by the way, I was doing 9, 10, 12 hours of work over there. I'm doing 7 and I'm getting home for my kid's baseball game or to go on the boat and fish. And guess what? I actually did more work than you did. I think that's the time. Because look, I don't have 9 people tracking. If I'm a small business, I don't have 9 people tracking my finances. I need one person that's data enhanced to do it for me.
Everyone's worried that AI is going to take their job away. AI is not going to take their job away, but somebody that knows how to use AI is going to take their job away. And the same thing with all of these technologies. You have to become more efficient. You have to do all this. But going back to the issue that we have around all of what you just said, which becomes, it becomes evident when things are hard, which means inflation, interest rates, all these things go up, and you can't hide behind the flow of money coming in anymore. The reality is all of this is because of delays. So I know when we were doing window installation, the biggest problem we had is like, how do you prepare for a job for manpower that's constantly being delayed? How do you prepare for window supply that's constantly being delayed? Why is it being delayed? Happens all the way from the top. Project doesn't start. Developers, they can't get permits fast enough from the cities. I know in British Columbia, it's a huge issue. Cities are not providing building permits and going through that process fast enough to get things moving. And then from there, it just every process. tendering the job, shop drawing reviews, starting the project, communication on delays and efficiencies, all the way through, there's inefficiencies that technology can and will solve. And so that by the time you get to the issue of the supply chain stuff, it should all be tied together. You know that because this happened 10 months earlier, that the person that's supposed to order plumbing pipes isn't finding out 3 weeks before the job that they were supposed to start isn't starting for another 6 months.
Yep.
And it's like and if you have a good handle on that, general contractors or developers that are tendering a job saying, we're going to build this in a year, and then the plumbing contractor or the electrical is going to get material saying it's going to happen this year where they're going to get pricing, doesn't get screwed over when it happens 3 years later, because
yep.
they actually have the right insight into being like, no, because we're so like accurate on our forecasting, we know it's going to happen within a few month window, then you're good. That's the only way it gets solved. And it's not an easy solution. Like, that's a whole movement. The good thing is, like you said, we were talking earlier, there, when you guys first started your journey, there's 450 construction tech companies. There's now, what, 4,000?
Over 4,000. Right? That we stopped counting. We just threw away the counter at that point.
There's people focusing on it somewhere. Some aspect of the construction process is being evaluated, but it won't win unless we come together and work together. Just like subtrades on site. A good site isn't because the electrician killed it. It's because the electrician, the plumber, the drywaller, the concrete, the windows, the rebar, I could go on and on. They work in lockstep together. Yep. They problem solve. It's a tightly, for the tech world, integrated process that yep. just is streamlined. And
it's amazing it's been working this long in some way, shape, or form. If you really step it back and think about it through that way, it's amazing, but there's room. And Rob, I'm going to steal this from you, because I'm going to use my next article that really talks to what Gabe was talking about. So Construction Dive, New York City. I was there last year for a DBIA event for the local DBIA chapter. And what I thought was really interesting was the number of municipalities and New York City folks that were there for that event. And this is a new initiative seeks innovations to streamline New York City's building process. So there is now a public-private partnership between New York City and the Buildings Tech Lab that they're creating an opportunity to look for ways to incentivize people to innovate in the construction industry. Because look, if you want to see construction at its hardest and at its finest and at its biggest, you go to New York City, because that's where it's happening. Sure, stuff's going on in Dubai and other places, but a lot of that is pipe dream. What this is the reality of the world's fastest growing city or most changing city on the planet. It has some of the hardest stuff. And what's super cool is a couple of the things they're focusing on this year. So by the way, if you're listening, you have until September 20th, 2024 to become a part of this, to like apply. And what they're after are two main areas: process management. And this is improving their own internal processes. And this hits on what Gabe talked about: permitting, inspection, code reviews, enforcement initiatives. These are all things that are so critical to what we do, but they're boat anchors dragging us down because they are built in paper
totally.
And old processes and disparate information systems and, you know, just old ways of doing things. Why? Because in New York City, if it can have happened, it has happened. So there's a reason, right? There's a why behind it. Why? Because it's happened before. So the city is trying to really lean in. And look, I'm not going to hide it. Rob, you and I have been in this market for a long time, and we've worked with a number of folks that sell in that area. One of the hardest places on the planet to get technology and to get technology adoption is the New York City area. The tri-state area, you would think, would be one of the most advanced, but it is not when it comes to the technology and when it comes to the changing ways that we build. There's a number of real valid reasons as to why. So I'm interested, what do you think of this public-private partnership, Rob, in going on in an area we've wanted to see innovation and change?
I think it'll be very interesting to watch. It's definitely needed. And I'll throw one out there. So here's a workflow to think about, because I've heard this from a few different people that supposedly still in Manhattan, when you're doing asbestos or lead renovation work, there's paper forms on the door at the entry point of who's inside the quote containment area. You can't use a mobile app because the regs say it, this is how to document it. There's one. Anyone that's going to go after trying to suggest how to do these workflows better, I think there's a few pieces of technology. Now, granted, that piece of paper is really good. But again, it's in the carbon locker. And it also gets hard to read. So why in 2024 are you using a paper form on a door to a containment area for an environmental cleanup kind of thing? There's what I throw at for the city to consider maybe looking at using some technology to improve that.
I agree, but I bet you I know where Gabe's going. Gabe, where are you going when you hear that?
I immediately think QR code and all the different ways that you can get people access to that information, no matter who you are. But I also think that it's a great initiative as long as it's, like we said before, based in reality. How fast is this initiative going to move? Is it going to be kicking tires? Are they actually going to start adopting some of this stuff? Like, you're right. The biggest boat anchor in many ways is that government process that is involved in the building of projects. It's needed, mind you. Like, you don't want to have buildings built without inspections. Like, that can't happen. And you don't want to privatize that because then that gets very messy. But at the same time, they have to push the innovative side because the municipalities are for the best interest of that city. The best interest of that city is to have efficient growth in innovative ways to put their citizens to work and have them be a spotlight on the global scale, especially at New York side. And you want the leading developers to invest in that world, but it's costing millions or hundreds of millions of dollars because of those processes. We all know how interest rates today. I know that when we were building high rises, this was only when I was, the last building I was on was probably about six and a half years ago. If they didn't get occupancy, this was one 40-story tower. It was 250 or 350,000 a month in interest that they were paying every month for that loan that they were getting from the banks. And so if it went over occupancy, that's coming right off the top every single month, right? And that's one high-rise project 7 years ago with an interest rate that was all-time low.
Yeah, now we're at all-time high.
Triple that.
Yeah, at
triple
least.
That, right? Yeah. And so that, for one, is insane, right? But for two, you cannot afford 2 months of a delay. And we all know jobs go more than 2 months delay a lot of times. We're talking high rises go easily a year if you don't have a good team and processes in place.
Yeah, I think the average is like 12 to 18 months in delay at this point.
Right?
So you can almost build that in.
From start to finish.
Start to finish. The other part is enhancing the use, data utilization, enhancing the use of existing data to automate operations and increase capacity. And this is what's cool is I want to tie it back to, I went to the DBIA Liberty chapter, the event last year, and I was really surprised at how many of the city of New York municipalities were there looking at design build as a new way. Not that it's new, but to use it in New York City more often to get projects rolling faster in a better initiative. So it's really cool to see all the different things, and it's be awesome to see New York City really get back in front and lead. So, man, has this been fun. I gotta call it. That's the end.
Love
Gabe,
it
was awesome to sit down with you, man. This is a killer episode. Where can people go learn a little bit more about Gabe and Salus? Because I'm sure they're going to want it.
Yes. Salussafety.io is our website. Track me on LinkedIn. I'm not as active as I should be. The grassroots construction in me I don't post as much as I should. But over the next coming weeks and months, I'm going to be on more podcasts, speaking at more events. I'm going to get better at my social media accounts, Instagram, everything else. But reach out.
Glad we could be the place that you got that started. Cause I think whether you like it or not, they're coming for you now. Cause I have to say, man, I'm believing in the why behind what you're doing. And that's what always drives us. So thanks again for sitting down, Rob, my man, thanks for bringing Gabe and thanks for fixing up that background and hanging out with me again.
Jeff, it's always fun to talk to people and geek out about some of these ideas. Gabe, it's great to hear your story and some of the ideas of what you're trying to bring to the industry. So thank you for the efforts and keep up the awesome work, my man.
Thanks. This has been amazing.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Gabe Guetta. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is the Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.